Inferno on Ice is produced in conjunction with Blaze Radio, the on-campus radio station at Arizona State University.
Tozer will work out for Ty Jackson. Jackson putting on the brakes. Passes to his brother Dylan. Dylan at the red line. A backhand try, a wraparound, and he scores! Another delayed penalty coming up as ASU gets the extra attacker on and in the offensive end. Down for Kerwin. Cross the ice. Jackson, he scores! Back on the other end of the ice. Trethaway with Cole Gordon coming his way. Gordon takes it away. Jackson takes the shot. It's off the post, but Eckerle cleans it up, and it's 3-2 ASU. Potter trying to get to Shemek. Five-hole, they score!
Welcome back to Inferno on Ice. I'm your host, Drew Smith. You can follow the show on Instagram and X at Inferno on Ice Pod and subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts. The Sun Devils played the U.S. National Development Team program this weekend, and typically I do a little recap of the series. But here to recap the series and everything going on with Arizona State hockey and to preview the Desert Hockey Classic is Ben Paris, the play-by-play voice of the Sun Devils on Blaze Radio. Welcome to the Inferno, Ben Paris. So Ben, welcome to the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in broadcasting?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Drew. I'm excited to be here. I'd call myself a fan of the show, so it's great to be here, and I love what you're doing with ASU and college hockey. I'm a senior at the Cronkite School. It's my third year at ASU, so it's been all Mullet Arena since I got here as a freshman, which has been super cool. I got to do a couple, like, the women's clubs games back at Oceanside before they knocked it down, so it was fun to see that. But yeah, involved with student radio at Blaze Radio, able to call hockey games there, and then get involved with what was really formerly known as Stream Team before a lot of stuff came through with different broadcast deals and stuff like that. With ASU joining the NCHC, all those games have to be aired on their platform. And then with the other sports being in the Big 12 now, everything has to be on ESPN Plus. Formerly, the ASU hockey games were all shown on some digital platform for Pac-12 Network, either just as a live stream or on Pac-12 Insider, which was kind of like a channel that was like very niche on cable. And then it was on some streaming services as well, Fubo. But students were really involved with that in the last few years. Matt Venezia, who graduated when I was a sophomore, but like he called the first ever games at Mullet Arena. There was an overtime win in one of those games. So students have always kind of been involved in broadcasting ASU hockey, which is really cool. There's some changes that were made this year because of the NCHC platform. Fox 10 Extra added some games. So there's games on local television now in the Valley. So they're simulcasting those streams with the radio stream with Alex Coyle and Tyler Paley, who are both great guys. They know the team super well. They love hockey. So it's a great product for the fans. Had a chance to call a couple of the games this season, just when they're not aired on the radio. Two of the Desert Hockey Classic games won't be on the radio because ASU aren't in the games. The National Team Development Program games weren't on the radio because they weren't NCAA games. So still able to stick around and get some calls. And yeah, it's been really fun to watch this team kind of develop over the last few years. And I know, as Greg Powers would say, go from chapter one to chapter two, from independent to joining a conference.
So what was it like calling games at Oceanside Arena?
There was almost like a perch right above where like the penalty box was. I mean, between like the end of the boards and like the wall of the arena, you're talking like 5 to 10 feet. I mean, I think they maybe got 500 fans in there, you know, when they would host Denver there back in the day as an independent program, or Michigan, when they get good teams in there. I think they can maybe fit 500. I think they were probably breaking fire code at some point. And you're on this perch. The ceiling is like not too far above you. Pucks would hit the ceiling, and you know, little pieces of schmutz or whatever would come down from the ceiling. It was intimate. You were very close to the. You're almost over the ice. I know there's some arenas in the NHL that are like that. I think perhaps like Calgary, where it's like you're almost over the ice. You can hear everything that anyone's saying. I'm glad I got to have that experience. It's kind of almost like, I guess it's not anymore, but when I was a freshman, it was a rite of passage. And before I went to ASU when I was younger, I know Everyone has Oceanside stories, and it's hard to believe they've played college hockey there.
What has been your most memorable experience when you've been calling ASU games?
So when they built Mullet Arena, because the Coyotes were there, there had to be certain, broadcast facilities, things available, because the NHL team needed to use them. The NHL had to have them, so we were able to use them as well. Every NHL team now has to have some type of space in between the two benches, put a reporter, an analyst, whatever, because the national TV contracts with ESPN and TNT all require that. So when you think of, anyone who's between the benches, as they call it, Pierre Maguire, Darren Panger, anything like that. So we were able to use that space for ASU hockey games, which was super fun. I did the Desert Hockey Classic last year down there. That was like the Kyle Smolin breakout weekend. He had 5 points in the two Desert Hockey Classic games last year. He had the game-winning goal in overtime. I think they beat Omaha in the championship game last year in the USHL before he came to ASU. So it was like the guy was never really a true freshman because he had so much, game experience. But he came in, it was like this breakout weekend, being down there, with the players and hearing what they're all yelling, what the players are saying to each other, what the officials are saying. You can't replicate that anyway. I mean, you can get a front row ticket, but you can't hear, what's happening on the other side of the glass. So those experiences are a lot of fun to be down there and tell some stories. It feels like you're on the bench with the players. So that was a lot of fun. And then I think my freshman year, I was in the same spot. They played, I don't remember who, in the last game of the regular season, but a couple overtime wins from that spot in between the benches. So that's been really cool.
So ASU played the U.S. National Development Team program this past weekend. You were on the calls on NCHC TV last weekend. What did you see from those two games, both victories for ASU? It goes down as an exhibition, but what are some takeaways from the series this weekend?
Well, in the first game, we saw everybody dress, which was really cool, including Cruz Lucius, who I don't know is going to play in the Desert Hockey Classic, but I
That's
think they
huge,
have.
though, that he
Yep.
was even
Yep.
dressed.
I don't know if he's going to play in the Desert Hockey Classic. I think by the North Dakota series, he should be back for sure. But everybody dressed. So, like, on we get line charts for the game, and like, you have three, you usually have four lines of three forwards and, three or four defenseman lines. It was, they dressed like 23 skaters plus
Yeah, it's an
Cruz Lucius.
exhibition, so you can do whatever you want
Yeah,
there.
so they can do whatever they want. So that was really cool just to see everyone. And that was fun. In retrospect, and I'm sure we can talk about this as well, is like you never know what you're going to get in an exhibition series, right? And when you're playing the best talent, I mean, they're all 17 years old, but you're playing the best talent, in the country. They're all going to go play at Michigan and North Dakota and Boston College all the top programs have players committed from the national team development program. So I didn't really know what we were going to get. In the early stages of ASU as a program, they hadn't played well against the national team development program. The first two seasons that ASU was a Division I program, I believe they played them at the end of the year in a scrimmage. And like we're talking about guys like, I mean, just NHL stars that have played for the national team development program at Oceanside. That's the hard part to believe is that you're bringing in all these NHL. There's a lot of NHL players out there that have played games in Oceanside Ice. You didn't know what you were going to get, but when the full team was dressed for the Saturday game, they obviously played super well, scored a lot of goals, which was a lot of fun. It was a close game because they're still playing a good team. There's some size advantage, some maturity advantage as well. And then in the second game, when they narrowed the lineup, went back to what they would regularly dress. I think 19 for a regular game. Lucas Sillinger didn't play. Noah Beck didn't play. Ty Murchison didn't play. Artem Schlein didn't play. So really, like a lot of your top six forwards didn't play. They gave Gibson Homer the start on the Sunday game, which it's not his net right now. I mean, Luke Pavicic is their number one guy, which is a really cool story. And it was a close game, a 1-0 game. You don't see a lot of those, especially in college hockey. And for a second, because of what happened in Denver with UNLV, you go, hey, like anything could happen. Like they could totally win this game. ASU's not dressing their top guys. And for a little second, you're like a little concerned of like, why is this team playing them so close when they are, I mean, ASU's a better hockey team. And then you're like, oh, wait. They didn't dress their top guys. But the second game was messy. It got out of hand. There was a ton of penalty minutes. Both of the Jackson brothers, I don't remember if it was Dylan or Ty, someone got a game
Oh
misconduct.
boy.
I mean, and part of me was like, why? Like, it's not a rivalry. It's not a team you ever see. I don't know. I mean, there's connections, everyone knows anyone somewhere, but it's like these are 17-year-olds and you guys are both grad students. Like, what are you doing? But it was a fun game. It was I liked that where it was on the schedule, these exhibitions before the second half of the season. These guys don't play for 3 weeks. They get a holiday break. They all got to go home for Christmas with their families, which is really cool. So it was a nice tune-up, I think, because they're still playing full speed, team with a lot of talent, and it was perfect. I think between this and the Desert Hockey Classic, where they're also going to have, good teams in the building, I think it's the perfect way to get the second half of the season series, the season going.
Yeah, so Desert Hockey Classic this weekend. It's an all Eastern team field besides the Sun Devils. No one from the Big Ten. It's going to be Cornell, UMass, Robert Morris. What are your thoughts on that compilation of teams there?
Well, teams from the East love coming here in December, January, February because the weather's great. I mean,
Yep.
it's a fact, and that's something that Arizona State takes a lot of pride in being able to host those schools and say, "Hey, come look at the weather." ASU's been big in the transfer portal the last few years, and it's stuff like that that attracts players. Like, hey, it might be really cool to live in Arizona and play hockey in December and January and February. The other part of that is I don't think there was any shot. I don't know if I don't think it's like an official rule, but you weren't going to see an NCHC team in that tournament. Omaha played in it last year. You weren't going to see that anymore because now
Yeah.
that ASU is in the conference, I don't think you're going to see that. And those are
No.
really all the teams that are farthest west. So, Colorado College, Denver, that are the two closest geographical teams. Omaha after that, because they played them right before the break, even though they were here last year, just wasn't going to happen. So I like having Cornell. I like having UMass. The RMU game is going to be really interesting. ASU usually gives themselves the more favorable matchup and the first game of that series so that they can, play in the championship game on Saturday for their fans. 3 o'clock game and a 7 o'clock game. So it's great. ASU gets the late game both nights, and I love the format. It's been really fun the last few years, and they've gotten some fun teams. I think my freshman year, Air Force came in, which was super fun. That's another close geographical team, being from Colorado Springs as well. So it's a fun little series, and yeah, though everyone who comes, because Moda Arena is still a brand new facility, was an NHL facility for a second, and that and the weather, teams love coming here, and that's why they announced they're having, I think they're calling it the Icebreaker Tournament. They're gonna have that next year as well. So it's a good spot for tournament hockey for sure.
Have you taken a look into any of the teams that are in the field?
Historically great teams. I like that UMass is coming. That's really exciting. And traditionally they're one of the best teams in college hockey. The Ivy League hockey schools, like your Cornells, are fascinating. Cornell, Yale, Harvard, they start their season so late compared to the other schools for whatever reason. I'm sure I think it's it, there's an academic based reason. They don't play as many games, so like when you look at things statistically, their sample size is always really small. So in a Harvard or a Yale or a Cornell, you don't always know what you're going to get because before the winter or the holiday break, they don't play a lot of hockey compared to, say, the NCHC, where they've played a third of their conference schedule, halfway through the season. And most of the teams, if not all of them, have played a lot of really good non-conference games as well. Robert Morris is, I think ASU may have split with them last year on the road, if I remember correctly. It should be a winnable game for them.
What are some surprises about the Sun Devils this year? We had Pavicic kind of take over that net. What else have you seen?
I think Luke Pavicic, I think that's really really special because he played 3 years of college hockey before coming to ASU, was at UMass Lowell and UMass, and his combined record was, I think, 12, 22, and like 3 or 4 ties. That's you've lost double the amount of games that you've won as a starter. So he came in last year. UMass Lowell was playing in the Desert Hockey Classic last year. Played really solid, but they played an Omaha team that was really good. That game went to overtime, and he surrendered the game-winning goal. But I would imagine that somebody at ASU saw him play. The situation that ended up happening with TJ Semtenfelter was unfortunate, but it's what happened. They needed another goalie this year, and somebody must have liked what they saw at the Desert Hockey Classic. And that's, when we talked about recruiting a second ago. So to bring him in, and he made 56 saves in the two games at Denver, made, I think it was like 66 of 68 against Minnesota Duluth or something like that. So it was, I love that he's been brought in here. He's been really solid for them. I think he's playing the best hockey at least of college, because he's in a really good situation. Noah Beck has been a joy to watch. Very rarely do you have, your leading power play score come from the back end. But to have a defenseman that can get involved offensively, the guy has 12 assists, 15 points on the season. So that's also really exciting. I love a dynamic defenseman. It's really important in college hockey. That's why Cale Makar played college hockey, was able to develop as a great defenseman. And now I'm an Avalanche fan. I'm from Colorado. I mean, I think Cale Makar is the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. So to have a guy in Noah Beck. Tim Lovell obviously left and went to Michigan. He's not with their program anymore as well, but that was a player that was really fun to watch because he played all 200 feet and he got involved in the offensive zone. And that's something that was really exciting. Colin Potter, what was a fun, we'll get this note in here about the National Team Development Program series. The program's a 2-year program. If when you play there, you play as a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old. So you have your U17 season, a U18 season. He left after his U17 season to play college hockey. He's the first forward in the history of the program that's responsible for 98 first round NHL draft picks to leave after his U17 season to go to college hockey because he figured, hey, Greg Powers essentially said, if you come here now, you're going to get a ton of playing time. You're going to be on the top line. You're going to, hopefully play here for 3 or 4 years. I believe he's draft eligible this year, so he'll get drafted somewhere. So Colin Pollard has been fun to watch. He's not the best skater in his age group by any means. That's the spot where he needs to develop the most, but that's going to be really exciting to watch over the course of the next few years. The Jackson brothers have been great to watch. They've both battled injury over the last few years, but when they're healthy, they're as good as anyone. They're playing on a line together. They regularly assist on each other's goals, which is really fun to, broadcast that. And then Schemmick and Schlein. I sometimes get them confused. Their names get me tied up, but Artem Schlein played insane at Denver, 4 goals in the 2 games, had the game-winning goal. And same thing with Benik Schemmick. He had the game-winning goal in game 1 against the National Team Development Program. And this is a really solid roster. I mean, they've had players with individual talent before. Robert Mastrosimoni was really good. They've just had so many good players that have come through the program. Johnny Walker. Just guys that come through the year. They've never had a team that's as complete as this one.
The Sun Devils are 5-3-0 in the NCHC going into the second half of the season here. What are your thoughts on the rest of the season, and where are some areas that the Sun Devils, what's going to be tough and what might be some easy get-bys?
It was interesting about the first half of the schedules. For the longest time, they had a losing record. I mean, they were below 500, and Greg Powers was like, we know we're playing better than we are, and the wins are going to come. And as a fan, that's really hard to listen to. It's like, okay, like, yeah, right. If you're not getting wins, we're frustrated. Like, I don't care if you're playing well, if you're not winning hockey games as a fan. It's hard to hear that from your coach, but he was right. You kind of had to stay patient as a fan if you wanted to see them win games. And they're now in a spot that they are really happy about because their strength of schedule and the pairwise goes up exponentially just by being in the conference. Even just by losing a game in the NCHC is better than losing a game as an independent. And at some points can be better than beating a bad opponent if you play a close game in the NCHC. So they love where they are, obviously, being in third place behind Northern Michigan, who's playing insane to start the year, 10-3-1 after the first 8 games in the NCHC. So that's a 6-1-1 conference record. North Dakota right behind them. They love where they are in the NCHC. They're gonna get to play playoff hockey for the Penrose Cup, which is gonna be really, really exciting for the first ever time. So yeah, second half this season is if they can keep doing what they're doing. And kind of the general rule, there's two big rules in college hockey that matter a lot in the NCHC. Number one, it's sweep at home, split on the road. And number two, you can never lose on Saturdays. Now, ASU sometimes flips that rule, and I think it's just the nature of the campus. The Friday night games sometimes do better than the Saturday afternoon games. ASU's rule has a lot of the time been on win on Friday and just play the game on Saturday. But for a lot of programs, the rule is don't lose on Saturdays. I mean, if they can do those two things, if they can sweep at home and split on the road, or even grab a couple sweeps on the road like they did at Denver, which no one was expecting. We all kind of went in there and said, all right, like if they get a win, that'd be cool. I did the Denver series my freshman year. There was a really controversial goal at the end of the first game that It was inside of 2 minutes. ASU lost 3-2 on the first night and 5-1, 5-2, 6-2 on the second night. Like, had no chance. Severely outplayed. TJ Senftenfelter had to make like a program record or like a career high in shots on goal or saves. Last year, they got the split at home, a great overtime win against Denver. And then this year, going in there, we're all right, like, whatever. And part of it, some of us were bummed to be there. I'm from Denver, but that was the weekend ASU football played BYU, which was the biggest game at home of the season. But we're like, all right, like, it sucks to miss that game. We all wanted to go to that game. But hey, if we get a win at Denver, we'll be happy. A sweep at Denver for this team changes everything. And when you look at Denver, the defending national champs, they have been not terrible, but they have been all out of sorts since ASU came in there and swept them. So if they can do that and kind of just shake things up, they love their newcomer mentality in the NCHC. They want to create as much havoc as they can and show everybody that we're here to compete now. It was a feeling it might take a few years to compete in the conference. It's not the case, which is really exciting.
It's January 2nd. The Sun Devils sit at 17th in the pairwise. Is it too early to start thinking about the national tournament?
No, I mean, I don't think so. What's nice about it is that you're always alive when you're in a conference. If they were 17th in the pairwise halfway through the season with an 8-7-1 record as an independent, it's very likely their season would be over. They won 24 games last year. That was a program record. 24-8-6 last season, and they missed the tournament.
That's pretty good.
I mean, they already have 7 losses this year, and they had 8 all of last year, which isn't bad. They're playing different competition now. But it's not too early to think about as well. I think they're in a good spot in the NCHC. I think their pairwise is only going to go up. They just can't really afford to lose games that they're not supposed to lose, right? A loss against Robert Morris in the first game of the Desert Hockey Classic would not be ideal for Arizona State. They want to win both of those games, and they want to, defend not only home ice, but they're the defending tournament champions as well. So I don't think too early to think about it. At all. It's something you think about every week because ASU lived and died by the pairwise the last few years, and it was always, are they going to make the tournament? And it's tough that they didn't last year. A 24-win hockey team, independent hockey team, but a 24-win hockey team didn't make the tournament last year. So it is something to think about. There's certain wins and benchmarks and numbers that you do think about week in and week out.
Couple rapid fire questions to close it out. Who are some broadcasters that you look up to, and how have they influenced your style and how you call games?
I love that question. I think anybody growing up watched Doc Emmerich. You don't try to imitate Doc Emmerich because he's the king, but I have a like Doc Emmerich hockey card, like a broadcaster hockey card. So that's someone I grew up listening to and just absolutely love. Brendan Burke on TNT, I think is incredible. One of the most exciting guys to listen to. Kenny Albert, been calling hockey for as long as I can remember and, came over from NBC when those deals changed. So love him as well. I'm a little superstitious. I don't think the Avalanche play well when Kenny Albert's calling the game. I don't love to see Kenny in Denver, but he's super solid as well. And then Bob Wichusen on ESPN, he is amazing. Obviously does the college football. He called the Boise State Penn State game in the college football playoff, and then he's calling like 8 games over, the next 14 days or something, dating
That's
back to that game.
incredible.
I like him on hockey. I think he's ESPN's best hockey broadcaster. And then Sean McDonough's fine. He doesn't fire me up the way Bob Wichusen does. But also Sean McDonough called the first Avalanche Stanley Cup of my lifetime. So I'll remember that.
Let's touch on the college football playoff Arizona State game really quickly. I know this is a college hockey podcast, but man, what a game that was.
I woke up this morning and I said, man, they really should have won that game. Fourth and 13 is going to be tough forever. Not a lot going on in Tempe right after the winter break. So the team came back at 10:30, 11 o'clock last night. I lived down the street from Mullett Arena and from Mountain America Stadium. So was there when the team buses pulled back up, and there was a lot of fans last night. And it almost had this feeling that they won the game even though they didn't. Everyone was proud. No one was super sad that they lost that game. It'd be really cool to see them play another one and get to play another game in the college football playoff. It felt like ASU belonged, which when you think circumstantially at the beginning of the season, you go back to, being picked 16th in the Big 12 media poll, back-to-back 3-9 seasons, you'll take that. You take a close loss like that every time. If the game had ended, if it was a 16-point loss, the game had ended 24-8, You would have been really upset and say, all right, we got stomped just like every other team in the college football playoff. Boise State didn't really compete in the second half. None of the away teams in the first round really competed in the second half. But to see them compete the way they did, get into overtime, it sucks that it's over and that Cam Skattebo will never play for Arizona State again because he's been probably my favorite college football player to watch probably ever, you know, as a fan in person or as someone that covers the team. So it's like this optimism that you have that, okay, we're going to be back next year.
And then let's go back to hockey. One more question for you. Which series are you looking most forward to for the Sun Devils in the rest of the season?
It's the Denver series at home, right? Denver started their season 12-0-0. ASU gave them their first two losses of the season. They're going to want to come into, you know, Mullet Arena, and they want to beat the crap out of Arizona State. If they, you know, lose the season series, that's a disappointment for Denver. So not only is it going to be really good hockey, even if they had split or Arizona State got swept, it would still be good hockey games no matter what, because Denver's always a good hockey team and always competing for a national championship. But circumstantially, of what's happened this year, right? Denver loses those two games. They get humiliated on a national scale against UNLV, which you can say whatever you want about that game. The final score is the final score. Call it an exhibition, call it whatever. They lost. That's a win for UNLV, and it's embarrassing for Denver on the national scale. They're playing, I think they will be playing very passionate hockey once they return. You know, David Carl and Zeke Bulliam are away at the World Juniors for Team USA. But once, you know, David Carl gets back into that locker room, it's going to be no messing around for Denver. I would love to know what he's going to say to those guys, because obviously he was away for that UNLV upset because he's at the World Juniors. I would love to know, you know, how you respond to that, because, you know, it's easy to say we're just going to wash that and ignore it. Denver got humiliated. I have three Denver alums in my family. They're big DU hockey fans. They don't feel great about it. So I'm excited to see Denver come back to Mullet. It's going to be very interesting to see how those games play out because, you know, you always kind of felt there was a rivalry aspect there, except ASU never had enough wins for it to be considered a rivalry. Denver kind of owned them forever, kind of kicked the shit out of them for forever. ASU has enough talent to compete with Denver now. And if you want to call it a rivalry, the two biggest cities that have hockey in the West, Denver and Phoenix, man, oh man, there's going to be a lot of good games for years to come.
That series is February 7th and 8th. Ben, how can people find you and how can people follow you?
Oh, I get to self-plug. Well, thank you very much, Drew. I'm on Twitter at BenParis04. It's a lot of ASU golf stuff on there because I actually work for that team. So if you want any ASU golf content and lots of college hockey on there as well, all my stuff is on YouTube. If you ever want to watch ASU hockey highlights or hear my voice, which I don't know why you would want to, but it's BenParis04 on Twitter is mainly where I am. So yeah, I appreciate the self-plug.
Thanks to Ben for joining the show, and we'll catch you next time on Inferno on Ice.